Let's all stand and read the scripture. I'll read the scripture verse to you. It's one verse. Titus 1:14. Not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth. You may be seated. Today's message is kind of a different one. I hate to squash your appreciation of this great movie. But as I kept studying it, my goodness, I loved this musical, but my goodness, I found out everything about it. Anyway, here it goes. There were at the time that this verse was written, fables, in particular Jewish fables, which the Christian was instructed to pay no attention to. We were warned not to get comfortable with these distortions of truth. Jewish fables, our fictions, our myths, are still very much all around us. Do we still give heed to them? Esau hates Jacob. Jews hate Israel. The Edomite Jew believes that if all the descendants of Jacob Israel were no longer alive, then the covenant recipient would have to go back to the one before Jacob, that is Esau, because of default. Remember, Esau was once in possession of the covenant and all its blessings, but he despised it. He sold it to his younger twin brother, Jacob, and a little later he lost the blessing because Jacob and his mother plotted against him and deceived his father. It had to be a good description to fool Jacob's father, Isaac, for Isaac loved Esau, while his wife loved Jacob. Isaac's eyesight at that time was very bad, so Jacob had to disguise himself as Esau. Fixing the venison wasn't hard, as his mother helped prepare the meal, but putting goat hairs on his arms and the smooth of his neck and wearing Esau's goodly garment convinced Isaac that it had to be Esau because Jacob smelled and felt just like Esau. Esau was an avid hunter and outdoorsman while Jacob was a shepherd. Now it's just the opposite. Esau is deceiving Jacob's descendants that Esau is Jacob. Esau felt the skins of goat hairs and smelled the raiment that Jacob wore, and that convinced him that Jacob was indeed Esau. It was the only time in the scriptures that man depended upon his feeling, and he was deceived. Let's think between the lines on Esau's raiment that Jacob wore to convince Isaac that he was really Esau. From the book of Jasher, we read in chapter 7, verses 24 through 29, and the last part of verse 45, and the garments of skin which God made for Adam and his wife when they were out of the garden were given to Cush. And after that, the death of Adam and his wife, the garments were given to Enoch, the son of Jared. And when Enoch was taken up to God, he gave them to Methuselah, his son. And at the death of Methuselah, Noah took them and brought them to the ark, and they were with him until he went out of the ark. And in their going out, Ham stole those garments from Noah, his father. And he took them and hid them from his brothers. And when he begat his firstborn Cush, he gave him the garments in secret. And they were with Cush many days. And Cush also concealed them from his sons and brothers. And when Cush had begotten Nimrod, he gave those garments through his love for him. And Nimrod grew up, and when he was 20 years old, he put on those garments. And Nimrod reigned in the earth over all the sons of Noah, and they were all under his power and counsel. Later in the book of Jasher, chapter 27, verses 7 and 10 through 12, we read, and Nimrod and his two men that were with him came to the place where they were, when Esau started suddenly from his lurking place and drew his sword and hastened and ran to Nimrod and cut off his head. And when Esau saw the mighty men of Nimrod coming at a distance, he fled and thereby escaped. And Esau took the valuable garments of Nimrod, which Nimrod's father had bequeathed to Nimrod, and which with Nimrod prevailed over the whole land, and he ran and concealed them in his house. And Esau took those garments and ran into the city on account of Nimrod's men. And he came unto his father's house wearied and exhausted from fight, and he was ready to die through grief when he approached his brother Jacob and sat before him. And he said to his brother Jacob, "Behold, I shall die this day. And wherefore then do I want the birthright?" And Jacob acted wisely with Esau in this manner. And Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, for so it was brought about by the Lord. Could this have possibly been the raiment that Jacob wore to convince his father that he was truly Esau? The scripture doesn't say, but it is a possibility. When Esau got home with his venison and went to his father and asked him if he was ready to bless him, his father trembled very exceedingly. He knew at that moment he had been deceived. Esau cried with a great and exceedingly bitter cry. What a scene that was. Father and son in deep distress, trembling and crying exceedingly. At this moment, the war began. The war has been going on for over 3,000 years. And it hasn't cooled down. It's now hotter than ever. Esau versus Jacob, Jew versus Christian, is the often secret clue of what is happening behind the screen in the world of Oz. Just look at who took part in Trump's swearing-in on Friday, January 20th, at the inauguration. First one was Bishop Wayne T. Jackson of Great Faith Ministries International in Detroit. Second, Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham. Third, Cardinal Timothy Doolin, the Catholic Archbishop of New York. The fourth was Rabbi Marvin Heer, Dean and founder of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. The fifth one was Paula White, pastor of New Destiny Christian Center in Florida. Sixth was Samuel Rodriguez, president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. And the seventh, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing God Bless America right before Donald Trump was inaugurated. Joseph Smith's vision was one of the Jewish fables we are not to believe. Inaugural Committee Chairman Tom Barrack said in a statement, quote, "I am pleased to announce that a diverse set of faith leaders will offer readings and prayers at the swearing-in of President-elect Trump in honor of the vital role religious faith plays in our multicultural, vibrant nation," unquote. Well, that too is another Jewish myth. The United States wasn't founded to be a multicultural nation with a set of diverse beliefs. It was founded by pilgrims and later Puritans who were Protestants, who were fleeing from the persecutions of the Roman Catholic Church and the Jewish synagogue. It was founded to be a non-Catholic, anti-Jewish Protestant nation. A black preacher, a son of a traitorous Jewish preacher, a white Catholic priest, a Jewish rabbi who is founder of the Holocaust Myth Center, a divorced white woman preacher from Florida, and a Hispanic leader of a Christian conference. What a collaboration of ministers. A Roman Catholic, a woman Pentecostal, black and Hispanic preachers, Judeo-Christians, and a rabbi who believes that Jesus Christ is now serving his time in hell. Please don't give heed to Jewish fables. There's another Jewish fable, major Jewish fable, that will be the main part of this sermon. It has warmed the hearts of several generations in that last over 50 years of its history. The last of the immediate family has now died. No one who was depicted by an actor or an actress in the movie is now alive. The story, with all its false facts, has depicted a time in history that is completely distorted. The Jewish myth, Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music. Today it remains one of the most popular films of all times. In inflation-adjusted dollars, the Oscar-winning movie remains the third highest-grossing film in history, trailing only Gone with the Wind and Star Wars. The Sound of Music was based on heroine Maria von Trapp's 1949 book, The Story of the Trapp Family Singers. But the Hollywood treatment took some liberties with the true history of the von Trapp family. The famous duo of Jews, Rodgers and Hammerstein, distorted history in a grand way and made the Austrians to be the enemy of Nazism. Then I've got a picture. It's the cast of The Sound of Music. You might recognize some of these faces that were in the movie. Got a question for you. In what countries is The Sound of Music the least popular in all the world? The answer, first, is Austria. Second is Germany. Why? In Austria, the movie ran for only 3 weeks in 1965, and it was not shown on television there until the year 2000. One theory for its lack of success is what Austrians have disliked: the musical's Americanized portrait of their culture. Others have speculated that the Austrians also objected to the show's gross distortion of the depiction of the Nazi occupation. The Germans and Austrians couldn't get over the fact that Americans had remade one of their favorite movies ever, The Trapp Family, which was as popular to Sound of Music as popular over here. The Austrians just didn't think it was authentic and hated the Hollywoodization of their country, clothes, and culture. And the whole Nazi issue, especially in Germany, was so bad that when it was first released there, a German producer cut everything after the wedding between Maria and George and some of Herr Zeller's scenes at the Salzburg Festival and their hiding and escape at the Nuremberg Convent. In short, the Austrians and Germans don't believe every Jewish fable. Got a map here. If you'll go down to the reading, then we'll turn back to the map. So drop down, then we'll turn back to it. George von Trapp was born in Zadar, which at the time of his birth was in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And I refer you to the map right here, and I'll show it to you later. He married an English girl, Agatha Whitehead, who lived in Rijeka, not shown on the map, which is a little bit further to the north on the same coast. Her grandfather invented the torpedo, and she inherited part of his immense wealth. She and George married and settled in Pula. All three of these cities lie on the coast of the Adriatic Sea. Well, if you go back up to the other one, there's Zadar right there. And she lived right here. And they married and lived right there at Pula. Now there's Italy. This is Europe in 1914. This is Europe in 1923. Now after 23, they carved up Europe. See, Yugoslavia is not in this. Romania is bigger, Hungary. Here's Austria, it's shorter. But look at here. Here's Pula right here. Italy got control of Pula. Von Trapp was a very successful submarine captain in the Navy on the side of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which fought on the side of the Ottoman Empire, Bulgaria, and Germany in World War I. So go back up to the map. And Italy flip-flopped from the Central Powers to the Allied Powers, which consisted of Great Britain, France, and Russia. Later in the year 2017, the United States joined the fighting on the side of the Allied Powers. After the First World War ended in 1918, Pula, which is where they were living, became under the control of Italy. So von Trapp's family at that time, seven children, became Italians. His first wife died in the year 1922 from pneumonia developed from scarlet fever. This death so upset the von Trapp family that they decided that they could remain in the house with all those good memories. So they sold the house and moved to Salzburg, Austria in 1924. So they're living right here, which became part of Italy. And they move up to their Salzburg. Maria, the second wife of George, was born on a train traveling from Tyrol to Vienna. Her mother died when she was 2 years old. Her father passed her off to distant relatives. She had a very bad upbringing. She was reared as an atheist and socialist. So her parents lived over here, and she took a train ride to Vienna over here. So somewhere in here, she was born on the train. And then 2 years later, her mother died, and she was passed around the relatives. She went to a school for teachers where she discovered the religion of Catholicism from a Jesuit. That's very bad, a Jesuit. She then wanted to become a nun, but in the monastery, she missed the outdoors and became sickly. It was at this time that George von Trapp asked the monastery if they had someone who could tutor their daughter Maria, who had suffered from scarlet fever. The third oldest child, Maria, who was the second oldest daughter, was not able to walk the 4 miles to school. So she was advised by her doctor to be homeschooled. No way we do that here. You have to have a school bus if you live more than half a mile away. Well, she couldn't walk the 4 miles, so she needed to be homeschooled. Maria was their choice. So Maria, the intern nun, was chosen to tutor their daughter, Maria, for 10 months. Maria was not chosen to be a governess, just a tutor to one of the seven children. This brings us to another major mistake. The movie changed all the names and the place of order, the first two genders of the children. First, we'll show you a picture. This is the von Trapps, either 1921 or 22. And then we'll go to the next picture, and you'll recognize this one. This is the movie, and this is the seven von Trapps from the first wife. The top photo shows the first seven, the real von Trapp children, their ages in 1938. How old do you think he was in 1938? He's 27 years old. Name is Rupert. The second was Agathe, 25 years old. Maria, the gal that had the scarlet fever, needed a tutor. She was 24 years old. Werner was 23 years old. Hedwig was 21 years old. Jonathan was 19 years old. And the youngest, Martina, was 17 years old. That was 1938. That was the year they left Austria. Then what about the movie? Well, these children born to George and Agatha were all older than the children in the movie. There were five girls and two boys. The youngest of the von Trapps in 1938 was 17 years old. The oldest von Trapp in the movie was 16 years old. The bottom photo shows the seven children of the von Trapps in the movie, five girls and two boys. In 1938, they'd have been these ages. Lisa was the oldest, 16 years old. She sang, "I'm 16, going on 17, to Rudolph, the German guy. He wasn't even involved in the story. Hollywood made him up. Friedrich was 14 years old, Louisa 13, Kurt 11. Brigetta, 10, Marta, 7, and Gretti was 5 years old. The oldest child, Rupert, was a boy, but the oldest child in the movie was Liesel, who was a girl. The second oldest, Agatha, was a girl, but the second oldest child in the movie was Friedrich, who was a boy. The rest of the children were the correct genders, but their ages were about a decade off. But there's another big difference. and I'll butcher this name, Maria Kuchera, Maria Rainer in the movie, married Von Trapp in the year 1927, 11 years earlier than in the movie, and 11 years before Germany annexed Austria. He was 35 years her elder, 35 years older than she was. They had three children together with five miscarriages, bringing the total to 10 children. The three children of his second marriage and their ages in 1938. Number eight, Rosemarie was 9 years old. Eleanor was 7 years old. And the last child, Johannes, wasn't even born yet. He was born in America in 1939 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. After the First World War, Austria became landlocked after the treaty. So George was unemployed as Austria's navy had no seaport available to it. The Von Trapps also lost most of their wealth when the Austrian bank that held most of their money collapsed. George had moved most of his wealth from a bank in London to a bank in Austria that was founded by Gusty Carolyn Lamer, one of his friends. Lamer needed help, but the bank failed anyway, and Von Trapp and others went bankrupt. That's a very interesting story. I didn't have time to go too much into it, but it's very interesting. She was quite a charismatic person. To help increase their vanished income, they rented out their house to boarders. One boarder was their priest and choir director, Franz Waschner, who helped develop the family choir for 20 years. He actually went with them to America and Scandinavia and France and London, all the place. The choir was 20 years, from 1935, and they finished in 1955. He was with them the whole time. The Von Trapps were already singing as a group long before Maria came on the scene. Waschner was omitted from the film as it would distract from Maria's role. Another Jewish fable. Like in the movie, the family entered the Salzburg Festival and won the event. But there were two major differences. Number one, the Salzburg Festival was depicted in the movie to be an amateur folk music competition. It was not. In fact, the Salzburg Festival was one of the most distinguished festivals of classical and orchestral music, opera and drama, and a very glamorous event. The Von Trapp family won the event in 1936, 2 years prior to the time depicted in the movie and the German annexing of Austria. A funny side event was when the Austrian officials visited the United States. I believe it was President Reagan, although I could be wrong on that. They had what they thought was the Austrian national anthem played Edelweiss. Edelweiss. The Austrians didn't even know the song because all the songs for Sound of Music were created by Rodgers and Hammerstein's. It was a very embarrassing time when they played that. Well, was Austria against the Germans invading their country or were they for the invasion? The Sound of Music portrayed the Nazis as being evil while the Austrians were good Catholics who hated the Nazis. Remember, the Von Trapps were citizens of Italy. He was offered a job in the German Navy, but refused because of his age. He was 58. It was agreed upon. The movie told the story that the Von Trapps escaped the situation their father was in and went over the Alps Mountains to Switzerland. That's how the movie ended. They have their suitcases, they're climbing over the mountain. It's another Jewish fable. The writers didn't think, and they were correct, that Americans were aware of the geography of Austria. If one traveled over the Alps from Salzburg, he would go right into Hitler's second home. That would be in Germany, 200 miles from Switzerland. The real Von Trapps left Austria by train and went to Italy, where they were citizens. From there, they planned their singing tour that took them to London, the United States, and the Scandinavian nations. The Von Trapps were an aristocratic family. If they hated Hitler so much because his government had no king, then why would they go to Italy, who fought on the side of Germany? And the United States, who did not have a king? I was not able to find this answer. Now we got the map, and I'll show you. There's Salzburg. If you go over the mountains, you're right in, you're in Germany. Here's Switzerland down here, 200 miles away. They took a train ride to Italy, is where they went. Took a train down there. The family just ripped this film up to shreds. They took a train ride there. In World War II, who declared war against who? It was the Jews who declared war against Germany in 1933. It wasn't the other way around. And why was that? It was because Germany under Hitler had broken free of the Rothschild banking system. The Jews had to declare war against Germany, and their desire was to completely eliminate the German people. The three main leaders of the Allies, United States President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and the leader of USSR Joseph Stalin were all Jewish. In what city in Germany was Hitler born? He wasn't born in Germany at all. He was born in Austria. He was born in the town Braunau am Inn on the border of Austria and Germany. It is located about 30 miles to the northeast from Salzburg, Austria. There were a lot of Germans who lived in Austria at this time who were suffering at the hands of the current government. It was really a rescue element of the Nazis to unify all the German people who were suffering in other countries. Now I've got a picture of Hitler's birthplace. Now, there's a granite stone in front of Hitler's birthplace right here. I think I read where they had to tear it down. After Hitler's birth in Braunau am Inn, he grew up in towns near to and in Linz, Austria. Hitler failed most of his schoolwork, and he wanted to be an artist. He failed in his attempt to get into art school in Vienna. His father died, and then shortly thereafter, his mother died too. Hitler was depressed. Hitler spent a couple years being homeless and living in soup kitchens. He eventually went to live in Munich, Germany. While there, he joined the German army in the First World War. Well, let's go to this map. This blue line is what? What's the blue line? It's a river. What river is it? The Danube. It goes right through Vienna. Oh, there's. See, Hitler was born up here. And he lived in Vienna and towns around Linz, and he lived actually in Linz too. So where he lived for most up till he was a young man. Then Munich's right over here. Austria was strongly in favor of Germany's invasion. Germany came into Austria and conquered it without a shot being fired. A shot was not fired. The previous government of Austria was a very pro-Jewish. Austria's economy was in large depression. This is incredible. Austria had an unemployment rate of around 33%. Why, across the boundary in Germany, unemployment was totally eliminated. The previous government of Austria was the Dollfuss Schlesinger regime, a representative one-party dictatorship that called itself a Christian cooperative state. It imprisoned National Socialists, Marxists, and other dissidents. But there was one important section of Austria's population that supported the dictatorial regime. That was the Jewish community. which made up 2.8% of the total Austrian population. At the time of Germany's annexation, 75% of the Austrian newspapers, half of its dentists, and many of its lawyers, doctors, teachers, and manufacturing businesses, sport teams, and so forth, were Jewish or Jewish-owned. The unemployment rate was 33%. Sounds like the United States today. After the annexation, Austria's unemployment dropped drastically. Its gross national product was over 14% for several years. America, for the last 8 years, had a gross national product of about 1.5% per year. The only people who did not rejoice at the Nazi invasion of Austria were, one, Jews, two, Jehovah's Witnesses, who have a Jewish leadership in Brooklyn, New York, three, Marxists, who have Jewish leaders, and four, monarchists. George von Trapp was the fourth one, a monarchist. A monarchist was a person who favored the monarchy as the governing body of the country. The von Trapp family was aristocratic and nobility. Hitler wrote in his book, Mein Kampf, that he hated monarchies. It was not because George refused to fly the Nazi flag or enter the Nazi Navy. He always hated the Nazi form of government since his youth. I couldn't find much about his friend, Augustine Carolyn Lehmer, to whom he gave so much money, and then her bank lost it all. I don't know for sure if George was a true Israelite or not. The same is true with Maria, his second wife. But when Germany came into Austria, practically everyone in the country was cheering them on. The Germans in Austria had been persecuted very badly under the previous government that was very pro-Jewish. Jews made up less than 3% of the population. Look what happened next. The Nazis immediately seized the assets of the Rothschild banks and captured much of the property from the mansions they lived in. Hitler put Baron Louis de Rothschild in jail and kept him there for about a year until his family paid a $21 million ransom. Did you know that? And there's newspaper stories. They bid up, they were bidding how much the ransom to pay. The Baron then fled to America, where he lived the rest of his days. Now, wait a minute. Iceland has done the same thing. They jailed the bankers, and some of them committed suicide, and others fled back to the continent. But many of them left the island they had betrayed. Isn't that good? Or is that evil? If we are for Iceland's actions, why wouldn't we be for what the Germans did and accomplished? Don't believe Jewish fables. George died in America in 1947 in Vermont. Have you ever wondered what did his singing children grow up to be? I'm going to tell you. First one was Rupert. He spent 30 years as a doctor in Vermont. Number two, Agatha was a Catholic elementary school teacher. She never married. Number three is very interesting. Maria spent many years as a lay missionary in New Guinea. She never married. As a missionary, Maria said that anyone with a car was in high demand in New Guinea. There were hitchhikers all over, and she finally decided, I'm not going to pick up any more hitchhikers. But Kukulcan was standing on the side of the road, and she relented and met him. He was a native of Tanzania. And she developed a friendship with him, and they had a wonderful rapport, which led to Maria, rather late in her life, adopting Kuklia. I can never pronounce this name. He was in college and graduate school in Hawaii while she was in Vermont. She fought for him to obtain a green card, and eventually he came to Vermont. Berea died in his arms. As a sidelight, probably nobody here knows that when I was about 22 years old, the church that I was a member of sponsored a missionary family in New Guinea. I had a desire to go there and be a teacher, but the plans to go never succeeded, and I never got to go. Praise God. Werner was married and spent his years as a farmer. Hedwig eventually moved back to Austria and became a teacher, never married. Joanna married and had 7 children. Martina married and then died in childbirth when she was just 30 years old. Now the 3 stepchildren. The first one is a doozy. Rose Marie suffered from depression and anxiety and often felt guilty for trying to live a life different from her mother's. After 2 tumultuous decades, including an attempt at nursing school that brought on another breakdown, she found a measure of peace in the Israelite desert. Her priest in Michigan headed the Zionist organization named Blossoming Rose, which operated a religious kibbutz where Rose Marie found her own sense of purpose and connection. She lived there in the desert of Israel for many years. She would stay there for 6 months and then come back to America for another 6 months. She did this for many years. She never married. Eleanor married and lived in Vermont. And then the last one is another interesting story. Joannis married and was the manager of the Von Trapp Ski Lodge in Vermont. My parents saw this. They loved the sound of music, and they saw it. Hey, the Von Trapp family, they saw, told us all about it. 60 years after they escaped Nazi-occupied Austria, the Von Trapps find themselves in another war. But they're fighting among themselves. Lawyers representing 2 branches of the family appeared before the Vermont Supreme Court to argue whether one branch shortchanged the other by $3 million in a transaction involving the family business. Johannes von Trapp was kicked out of the ski company, but won back control the next year and performed a reorganization. Minority shareholders, including his sister and the children of 2 brothers, objected and cashed in their shares. They were paid $35 a share, $34 a share. The business paid the dissenting family members about $2.5 million. They challenged the payment of court, saying they were due roughly twice as much. The court ruled in favor of the minority shareholders. They were paid $63 a share. My conclusion, who gets to write the history of the wars? The winners. Who won World War I and World War II? The Jews. And they have written the history of these 2 wars. And they are full of lies because they are liars. That is exactly what our Savior referred to them as being. He said they were liars. For example, almost every school book in America will have a unit in American history titled The Civil War. But that's a lie. America didn't have a civil war. They had 2 separate nations that fought against each other because one side wanted to be separate from the other. The other side fought to unite the 2 sides. If the South would have won, there would have been 2 nations instead of 1. And what was the war fought about? Slavery? This is another Jewish lie. How many textbooks would tell you it was the Jews who were the owners of the ships that brought the slaves to Brazil, the Caribbean islands, the United States, and so forth? They also will admit the economic reasons for the war. The South was very agricultural, while the North was industrial. But the most important point is, what do the Jews say about Jesus Christ? They're the only people that say this. Is it good or evil? Do they tell the truth or are they liars? Their holy book tells them that Jesus was born of a prostitute, referring to Mary, and a Roman soldier. They go on and say that he was one of the evilest men that has ever lived, teaching lies to his people. And who do they say is the evilest man in the 20th century? Adolf Hitler, the leader of the Nazis. They say that he attempted to conquer the whole world, and his plan was to eliminate the Jewish people. Is that true or is that false? Let's look at just three things Hitler did and the Nazis did after Hitler became Chancellor of Germany. Just three. Number one, Hitler broke free from the international banking cartels. Did what? When Hitler began as Chancellor, the German people had no work, no money, and they were starving to death. Inflation was so high that a wheelbarrow full of banknotes could not buy a loaf of bread. And many Germans were living in shacks after their homes and farms had been seized by who? Rothschild Rockefeller-controlled banks. After Hitler was elected, one of the first things he did was fix the corrupt, debt-based financial system by completely thwarting the international banking cartel. The Nazi government issued its own currency, known as the Reichsmarks, which were debt-free and uncontrollable by international financial interest. After Germany's public banking system was installed, World Jewry responded by declaring a war on Germany, including a global boycott of German goods. When Germany got rid of the Rothschild Bank and printed their own money, the Jews declared war on them, 1933. Within 2 years, the German economy was flourishing with its newfound stable and inflation-free currency. Wouldn't it be great if we had a president who would tell the Federal Reserve banks that they were no longer needed, that they were to pack their clothes and be gone forever? The Congress would be printing our currency and cutting our coins, just like the Constitution indicates that they are the ones that should do the job. The Founding Fathers knew the dangers of a privatized banking system. Can you name the three presidents who did something to derail the system of debt money? Were they right? Or were they wrong in doing what they did? If you say they were right, then what do you say about the Nazi government who was successful and getting rid of their national bank? Only one of our presidents was partly successful. The other two failed in their efforts. Number two, Hitler created a thriving economy with no unemployment. I never known a country that had no unemployment. After Hitler got rid of the Rothschild banking system, he began his reign by constructing new roads, bridges, dams, canals, port facilities, and much-needed repair of public and private buildings. Everything was done with public money that owed no interest to the international banksters. Next, the Nazi government encouraged women to be homemakers. And all the work being done to repair and improve the country's infrastructure and transportation created jobs for the man. The unemployment problem had been solved within only 2 years, and Germany was back on its feet. Now, question, is that part of God's law, or is that part of Jewish feminism? Our country has gotten so far away from God's law, we don't even recognize it. Germany went from bankruptcy to being financially independent in just 2 years. Third thing the Nazis did, Hitler emphasized respect for women, children, and strong family values. During the economic hardship, just before Hitler was elected, Germany was seeing a declining rate of birth. A Are we seeing that here now? Rate of birth among white people is declining. In 1933, Hitler passed a law that enabled married couples to obtain interest-free loans of a minimum of 1,000 Reichmarks, equal to 9 months' salary, to set up homes and start families. For each child birth, the couple could keep 250 marks and did not have to repay it. Hey, if you had four children, you didn't owe anything. This system was pioneered by the Nazi government and exists today in Switzerland. What would we do if a presidential candidate suggested a plan like this? Would we be for it or against it? What if every family could obtain a loan up to $40,000 with no interest? No interest. And for every child born, they would not have to repay $10,000. Would you be against such a plan? Cincinnati was founded by over 50% Germans. We have an area of town that is still called Over the Rhine. The United States had so many Germans living here that German almost became our national language. Germany was the centerpiece of the Protestant Reformation. Martin Luther wrote a book entitled The Jews and Their Lies. Too bad that most Lutherans haven't even heard of it. Another Jewish lie. The Sound of Music left a very important part of the story out. If you listen to every word of the story, you will not hear the word Jew or Jewish said. It is omitted. There are no Jews even mentioned as being there. And they were the cause of the war. I'm sure that the Von Trapps had many Jewish friends. The Germans are our brothers. The Jews are our enemy. Who do you believe? Esau hates Jacob. Esau desired to murder Jacob. Esau's descendants desired to completely kill off all the Germans and then the rest of the Israelites. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. To be continued.